And welcome back, Hawkeye fans, for another edition of our Hawkeye History Podcast here at Hawkeye Nation. Happy to be joined this week by former Hawkeye linebacker Grant Steen. Grant, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always nice to be remembered. It's been a long time since I've stepped on the field for the Hawkeye, so it's always cool to catch up and do things like this with people from the media.
And you still have a 319 area code on your cell phone, so you can't, I mean, you obviously can't give Iowa up.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's just too big of a hassle to change your phone number. I've lived quite a few places since my time in Iowa City, but it's super convenient to keep that 319 number. And it's always a good talking point when you meet people, too.
Let's start there, if you will. Let's start with kind of your path since you've left Iowa, and then we'll circle back around to your time with the Hawkeyes. Let's start with what you're doing now. Let the fans know kind of what you're up to these days.
Sure. Well, my last year playing for the Hawks was 2003. Kind of had a long journey since then, as a lot of people do. But currently I'm a strength and conditioning coach for the Seattle Seahawks, and I came into being a strength coach in 2009. I became a graduate assistant strength coach at the University of Hawaii, and shortly after being there as a grad assistant, I was hired full-time and spent 4 years working at the University of Hawaii, which my wife and I loved. We didn't really see ourselves leaving there. Met a couple coaches through, you know, doing different conferences, and we brought out coaches to do coaching clinics at the university. And one of those coaches was Ivan Lewis. And at that time, he was the head strength coach at the University of Washington. So in 2013, made a hard decision to leave Hawaii and come to University of Washington. At the end of the 2013 season, Steve Sarkisian was hired to be the head coach at USC. So our staff moved down to Los Angeles, and I was there for 14 and 2015. Got an opportunity to kind of move up the coaching ranks and move to Stanford for 2016, which was interesting because that was right after the Hawks lost in the Rose Bowl. So the players were very eager to give me a hard time, but had a great time at Stanford. Life kind of changed there for a little bit for us, kind of reevaluated some things. I took a step back from the college atmosphere for a couple of years, and I worked at a company called Exos down in Florida. Exos is well known throughout the performance industry for combine training for pro athletes, for off-season training. And at the facility that I worked at in Florida, we did a lot with the special operations community. So there, every branch of the military came through our building. And it was a really eye opening experience for me to be around some very high level, operators. That was my first experience working with military personnel, and it was great. But then here in, early in 2019, Ivan Lewis got the head job here at the Seahawks, and it was great to reunite with him up here and a couple other guys that I worked with at USC. So, I'm extremely excited to be working in the NFL. My NFL playing career really never got off and panned out, but this has been an amazing experience working with, number one, working with great coaches, great people around the building, around the organization. So it's been a fast last 10 years or so since I started coaching, but it's been great.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to leave Hawaii, man.
Yeah, it's you know, I grew up in Northwest Iowa and spent a lot of time on the lakes and stuff, being outdoors. And so my wife and I were big surfers. Like, we started surfing long before we moved to Hawaii. We were kind of already living on the West Coast. We lived in Arizona for a little while. We lived in LA for a while. So that was like the hardest part, honestly, is, you know, kind of leaving like the lifestyle that we had there. And just great people, like the community, our coaching staff, their families really are very welcoming there, and made a lot of great friends. So yeah, leaving Hawaii was tough. A lot of the coaches that I've met along the way, they're like, hey, you're supposed to finish your career in Hawaii and not start it. So, you know, it is what it is. It's been fun, though.
So do you get a hard time from, or have you gotten a hard time from Coach Pete Carroll about the Orange Bowl?
You know what? It really only came up one time, and he's probably forgotten about it. You know, that was a long. He's coached a lot of games, and he's had a couple Super Bowls in there. So I think the Orange Bowl's a distant memory for him. But yeah, he gave me a hard time about it right when we got up here. So a lot of the SC fans remember that game. That was like Carson Palmer's, you know, icing on the cake of his amazing career.
How would you compare and contrast strength and conditioning at the college level to the NFL level?
Sure. The biggest thing is in college, the players are always the same age. You know, they're 18 to 22, 23, depending on if they redshirt or not. Whereas in the NFL, guys are coming in as young as 20 and then as old as, you know, 34, 35. So the age range is a big difference. Guys can train pretty hard and intense, you know, their first 4 to 6 years, depending on their background. And then it's a lot of communication with the older players. You know, they have things that they like to do. They have things that they're dealing with physically. They got a busier personal life. You know, they're probably married with families and things like that. So just the open communication. But they still want to work, you know, don't let the, misconception that pro players don't want to work. That is a false thing that people might think. They want to work and they want to train hard. So a lot of times you have to be the brake pedal rather than the gas pedal with some of the older guys. You know, they want to train hard. You just got to make sure that you set them up for success with what we're doing inside the training atmosphere.
How did you get into strength and conditioning? What was kind of the impetus to go into that field?
Well, it kind of goes all the way back to my high school experience. You know, I went to Emmitsburg High School. My dad's a high school coach. He was our defensive coordinator when I was a player. Then he became the head coach. And our head coach, Dwayne Twait, and my dad were huge, huge advocates of how we could gain an edge through the weight room, through training and being organized and being accountable to your teammates. And it proved to be a big difference maker when I was in high school. You know, our team was in the weight room. They were doing the things to prepare themselves. So that's where it started, really. And then I had a school project. I want to say I was in eighth grade on kind of like a career, you know, things that you would like to do in your career. And they said you cannot pick being a pro athlete. So that one was out the window. So I had always wanted to coach, and I'd kind of starting to, you know, enjoy the weight room and investing things. And then, and it just ironically, the summer before this project, the head strength coach from Iowa State at the time, Matt McGettigan, he came to our high school and did a coaching clinic because we had just built a brand new weight room. And my dad and Coach Twait wanted to make sure that everything was organized in a safe and efficient manner. So a little bit of a relationship was created there. And I actually interviewed him for this project, and he kind of laid out, you know, what being a strength and conditioning coach in college was like. And I was like, man, that sounds like something I'd really like to get into. So that was kind of my first experience with the field. And then, like a lot of players and people that you interview probably on this show, Coach Doyle made it happen for me. You know, I thrived in his program. I thrived on the field because of his program. And he's the one that helped me get into this field. You know, my time as a player was after college was pretty brief. And I knew I wanted to coach. And it was kind of, you know, at the time, what were the opportunities at that time? So this was, you know, 2007, 2008. You know, I didn't know if I wanted to go down the position coach route. Do I want to go down the strength and conditioning coach route? And it just so happened in an opportunity at Hawaii on the strength and conditioning side came up. And ironically, Coach Doyle had coached the head strength coach's brother when he was a college player at Utah. So there was a little bit of connection there, and
gotcha.
I was able to kind of work my way in the door that way. So it just was really, like a lot of things in life, a matter of timing and opportunity. So, but again, like, you have to have a passion for what you do. And I've always felt that having a physical preparation advantage, was a key for me. And I just try to, bring that to what I do now, in my job.
Other than kind of connections and things like that, in what way did Coach Doyle impact you just going through his program and probably, you know, since you've left, I'm sure you've probably leaned on him for advice too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have enough time in the show to talk about all the ways that not only Coach Doyle, but every single coach at Iowa really impacted me. But, you know, specifically, Coach Doyle's program is it's doing things really, really well, doing the simple things really well. You know, a lot of times there's a misconception with training, you know, athletes that we have to be doing these, you know, really, really fancy, exotic things to gain an edge, when honestly, like, showing up, giving great effort, and being consistent are probably the most overlooked things, not only in physical preparation, but probably in sports in general. And you could probably take that into any field of work that people do. If you show up consistently and you put in the work consistently, you're going to get results. Now, after you gain some results, then you kind of got to navigate some different specifics to what you're doing. But just being consistent with how you approach things, you know, Coach Ferentz is the same way. Like, he's never too high. He's never too low. Very intense and listens, you know, so just all those things, just soaking it up. And, you know, I always had in the back of my mind that I wanted to coach. So, you know, I definitely was paying attention to a lot of those things, you know, maybe more so than, you know, guys that had no desire to coach. So yeah, I mean, just an amazing, amazing person to be around.
What's a day like for you? Maybe every day is different. I'm not sure.
Right? Yeah.
Work day is like.
Yeah. So in the NFL, it's pretty normal that, you know, the game on Sunday, most teams come back to work on Monday. And that for us is a big day for, what we do. So we're going to get the guys to, you know, first of all, we got to evaluate, you know, kind of the injuries that happened in the game and how we need to adjust their training and, little things that we need to do with them to, you know, expedite some of the healing. We're going to do a lot of soft tissue stuff. most of our guys are really good at doing that outside of themselves. And that's kind of more of a trend now with pro athletes, like having a lot of people around them to take care of soft tissue, to take care of, you know, individual needs, but we're going to check those boxes as well. And that's a pretty big lift day for our players as well. It's a big film review day. Pete Carroll calls it the Tell the Truth Monday. So looking at the film, seeing what happened, things like that. Tuesday is an off day in the NFL for the players. It's not an off day for all the coaches. You know, we have guys that'll come in to do some extra work, guys that are working up on rehab stuff. Maybe they're doing a return to play protocol with us. And then it's pretty standard after that. You know, the guys are going to get 1 to 2 more training sessions with us on Wednesday or Thursday. Big practice days on Wednesday and Thursday, kind of taper down on Friday. You know, you might be traveling, you know, here on the West Coast. You know, if we play an Eastern time zone game, we travel on Fridays. And then walk through Saturday and turn it up on Friday. So It's basically the same layout as a college schedule, except everything's one day later, you know.
Do you have long-term goals, or do you kind of just go day by day?
You know, I was pretty eager when I first became, you know, a strength and conditioning coach. Like, hey, I want to be a head strength coach, like, tomorrow. And I've really, really embraced kind of the role of being an assistant strength coach, because you get to do a lot more of the – I guess for lack of a better word, game planning. You know, I get to attack more of the programming. I get to coach a lot more of the details and be involved with the players. Whereas a head strength and conditioning coach is, their time is, you know, really, really bought up. Not only in the pro level, but at the college level, you know, they're doing a lot of meetings. They're doing a lot of planning with administration. They're still coaching, but they really rely on their assistants to do a lot of the, you know, detailed work and planning of what's going on. And I really enjoy the planning and, you know, talking to the players, you know, about, hey, how do they feel, what they're doing. So some of my initial eagerness to be a strength, to be a head strength coach or director has kind of maybe been tempered. That's definitely a long-term goal, but I'm not in a rush to do it. You know, the longer that I'm in this, it's all about who you're around and who you're working for. Not necessarily just, hey, you have the title and, you know, everything's, you know, good after that. So I enjoy what I'm doing right now. And it all depends on maybe who calls you and things like that. I've had those calls in the past, and, some I've just automatically said, no, that's not for me. And, honestly, other ones I just didn't get. I went through the interview process and, you know, wasn't fortunate to be hired. So, again, I'm not in a hurry, but that is a long-term goal, in the right opportunity.
I think you said you got into the field in 2009. What was going on between the time you left Iowa, you gave the pros a try, and then what were some of the things that you kind of tested out before you landed on this profession?
Well, okay, so my last year playing was 2003. I was an undrafted free agent in 2004, my rookie year to the New England Patriots. Went all the way through training camp there and was released on the final cut. Had some in-season workouts with different teams, and nothing really happened that rookie year until after the season. The Patriots re-signed me to their team going into 2005, and they allocated me to play in NFL Europe, which I had no idea really what NFL Europe was. I'd seen it on TV, but I didn't know the details behind it. So basically NFL Europe was just another opportunity for guys like myself to get film at a professional level. So I ended up playing in Frankfurt, Germany in 2005, and our team was awful. you have 50 players on your roster, and by the at the last game of the year, we had 28 new players on our team.
Wow.
You know, guys were getting hurt, things like that. There's not many transactions where guys, you know, kind of once you make the team, you're going to be playing there the whole team. So it was a little different. You weren't having a lot of roster moves, but guys were just getting hurt. But it was a great, I mean, amazing life experience. You know, I didn't really have a big desire to go to Europe. So I got to go over there and play football and do it. Came back with the Patriots again, was in a pretty good spot. And it just didn't work out again. They released me after training camp was over, and about, I don't know, 2 weeks later, I ended up going up to Montreal in the CFL, and I played up in Montreal in 2005, 2006, and had a great experience up there as well. It's a different game. There's some different rules. You know, the roster has to be half American, half Canadian. So, That can really vary, depending on injuries and things like that on, you know, making decisions. It's a pretty tough business for the front office people there, when they get into the meat of the season and guys get hurt and they have to make sure that the ratio is right. And I kind of got caught up in that a little bit and wasn't able to stay there long term. I knew at that point football is kind of coming to an end, and arena football had changed the rules at that time where you don't have to play both ways. So I played one season of arena football in Arizona. And at that time, my wife had gotten a job in Arizona. So it kind of worked out in both ways. She got a job there while I was still playing in Arizona, playing in the CFL, moved down there, played a season. And then the Arena Football League folded for a little while after that. So that was obviously the end of the road for football, which I kind of knew was happening. Everybody kind of knows when their time is done. And so there was about a year there where I was just I was working odd jobs. I had worked at a high school there in Phoenix, which was a really good high school, all boys school, Brophy High School. Was working there kind of in the weight room. I was coaching, for them. And, you know, just one thing led to another. My wife got a job in L.A., and we moved to L.A., and then shortly thereafter, I got the opportunity to go to Hawaii. So we packed up and moved to Hawaii. So things, you know, there's a whirlwind time as a player after college when you're kind of on the bubble of, you know, making it, not making it. What do you do? You know, there's a saying in the NFL, like it only takes one team to fall in love with you, you know. So for me, it just, you know, I never really lasted a long time. So about 4 years from 04 to 08 in there where I was kind of in and out, playing, not playing, and then coaching started.
You touched on this, and I always find this interesting and to ask guys this question. You say you kind of knew it was your time was up. It was time to move on from the game, at least from a playing perspective. What do you remember from that, and how do you know?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you put a lot of time and a lot of effort into making it. And going into the draft, my agent, you know, was very honest with me. He's like, you know, you're a late round pick. You're a free agent guy. I was also a long snapper too, so I had a little bit of versatility on my side, you know, to try and do a couple things. But he was like, you need to give this about 2 years, because once you're out of it for an extended period of time, you know, it's over, you know, and it happens all the time. Guys are like, oh, you know, I've been out for 2 years. I'm still in good shape. And, you know, you just got to tell them, like, hey, man, it's over. You know, mm-hmm. You need to start thinking what's going to happen. So I kind of knew that going into it. And, but by no means did I have a plan B. You know, if you have a plan B, you're probably already on to plan B. I just wanted to go all in on it, you know. Yeah. So I was, you know, between times in New England, I was back in Iowa City. I would train. I had a couple side jobs to just kind of keep me busy, pay the bills. I lived with Sean Considine for a little while he was still in school. He let me just kind of sleep on a couch. You know, everybody has those stories. But it's kind of during that time, I talked to Coach Doyle, I talked to Coach Ferentz, and Coach Ferentz was like, well, you can probably chase this and, you know, until you're married or you have kids. And I wasn't married or had kids at the time. And, you know, that's kind of reassuring, but you just got to have a time frame in your mind. You know, it gets hard to chase the dream when really nothing's happening. But fortunately for me, things happened there for about 4 years where I didn't make any money, but I didn't lose any money, and I had a great time doing it. I learned a lot about the business. You know, Robert Gallery was my roommate my last 3 years in college, so I know what it looks like from a number two pick in the draft, and I know what it looks like for me as a free agent guy. So it's really been worthwhile now where I'm at, because I can relate to where guys are as they come into our building, and it just gives you a lot of credit. You know, I played professionally, and not a lot of strength coaches have college experience or definitely pro experience under their belt.
Going back, and you talked about this earlier in the interview, that we're a little bit older, and I'm not sure people understand how good of a program you played for in high school. With Coach Tweed. I mean, we have an understanding of that, but sometimes, you know, as time marches on, people forget. But how did that prepare you for Iowa, and at what point did you feel like, because you were a walk-on, I mean, you were a walk-on, yep. Just like you were an undrafted free agent, you've kind of had to push your way in since the beginning.
Sure. You know, I think the it's funny you say they forgot about us. Unfortunately, Emmitsburg isn't as strong as they were. A lot of things have changed. Not a lot of people are there anymore, so they're playing at a – so I think they're playing 1A football now. You know, they're still making the playoffs and whatnot, but it was a serious thing. You know, it was, you know, demanding. It was tough. It was high expectations, and I didn't really realize how high the expectations were until I was a senior. You know, my junior year team, it arguably was the best team in Emmitsburg history, and I'll go on record with that. I think every single player that started played college football or college sports. So, I mean, that, number one, it was a very talented group of guys. But when I became a senior, I was like, man, there's a lot of pressure because those other really good guys are gone. And we ended up losing. We were the number one team or number two team, and we lost to West Lyon in the first round of the playoffs, and they were number one or number two. It was like number one and number two playing the first round of the playoffs. And it was like, man, the expectations are really high, and now you lose in the first round of the playoffs. So you understood what it was like to have pressure. But I think in my scenario, it's like a lot of kids from Iowa get overlooked, and they have to, and they end up walking on because people don't think the competition's really that great. And, you know, are they going to be that good at the college level? And I was just used to, you know, working hard and doing things right. And I had a great football IQ, and that goes back to, you know, learning football and being a coach's son. You know, you pick things up fast, and that's why I was able to, you know, get on the field early at Iowa, because I didn't need a lot of learning reps. I could just see the schemes and, you know, figure them out. It helped me at the NFL level too. You know, a lot of things in New England were similar schematically to how we did things at Iowa, and I was able to learn fast and be reliable. It just, you know, there's some different things in the NFL. There's a lot of numbers and balancing things that happen. So anybody that comes from a winning program, they got a little extra inside them. They know how to win. They know how to compete. I'm just very fortunate that, you know, I was raised in a great program, you know.
So I'm sure you had opportunities to play at smaller schools and maybe get scholarships or
yep.
assistance or whatever. Did you think about that at all, or give it any thought, or was it like, I want to test myself at the highest level?
Yeah, I definitely had opportunities at other schools, you know, smaller level schools. You know, up in Northwest Iowa, there's a lot of D2 schools, and a lot of those schools now are 1AA, you know, the South Dakota State, right. Some of the Minnesota schools. You know, so I had opportunities, but I had gone to so many camps, you know, during high school, and I saw some of those guys that had signed with, you know, Iowa State, Nebraska. And I'm like, these guys are not better than me. You know, and there was an opportunity to go to Iowa. There was opportunity to, I probably could have walked on at a lot of schools, you know, in colleges will take walk-ons nowadays, you know, no problem. But I knew deep in my heart that I could play and that I could play really well, you know, and Iowa was my dream school. You know, we were a Hawkeye family. So to go to Iowa and to do it was really my goal all along. So it's just, they gave the coaches there give opportunities, and you just got to take them.
Well, if I remember correctly, you were almost built that you were almost the prototype for that Leo linebacker position. Just kind of that look, that that skill set. Did you feel comfortable in that spot from day one?
I think LeVar was the prototype, and I just happened to be the next guy. You know, I don't know how many people realize how good LeVar really was. You know, he played eight years in the NFL and played really well. He was fast. I think he was like, he might have won the 100-meter dash in high school. Like, the guy was an amazing athlete. And he was my mentor those first couple of years. Like, he's more mentoring than I've seen a lot of older guys be to younger guys now that I've been around a lot of places, like willing to take time out of his day, you know, hey, call me if you need something, call me if you want to go over the playbook, you know, let's get up in the meeting room. So I just give LeVar a lot of credit and a big shout out there. But playing the Leo position was easy for me because that's what I played in my first couple years in high school. So it was an easy transition, where I think some guys come in and play in that position, they've maybe played safety or they've played inside linebacker. And it's just a little different feel when you're on the line of scrimmage and you're, you know, the tight end's right there in front of you, or O lineman's right there in front of you. It just happens a lot faster, and you have to be very, very disciplined with your eyes. You can't be looking in the backfield trying to make tackles, or the ball's going to be outside you in a heartbeat. So, yeah, I guess in a sense I was made for that position. And obviously, you know, as the game has evolved, that position's evolved, and it's a little different now. It's kind of a hybrid. You know, I think Christian Kirksey AJ Eid, some of the guys that played after me really, really were at that next kind of wave of what that position really looks like. And now it's kind of transitioned to a big defensive back. So it's just a matter of how the schemes go. You know, football evolves, you know, but it's definitely it's a fun position because you have to be able to do a lot of things and you get to do a lot of different roles on the field.
Yeah, it's been a good position for Iowa. When you think about it, you named a couple of guys, and then you got Ben Neiman, who's with the Chiefs, and is playing it now. And it makes guys attractive to the NFL, a guy that has that type of versatility.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL, there's so many schemes, you know, that the under defense that, you know, Norm ran when I was there. You know, still, it shows up in the NFL. You got to have a guy that can do that, but that guy also has to be able to cover a back out of the backfield one-on-one. You know, right. He's got to be able to play in space. And it's even harder in the NFL because you have such a short window to reroute guys and do things at the line of scrimmage. And then in the open field, you have to be able to do stuff. So, you know, I don't know if guys really, really understand the position coming out of high school unless they've had some experience playing it. I think, honestly, some guys get frustrated playing that position because your role is not to make a lot of tackles.
Right.
You know, your role is to set the edge on a run play and, you know, let the Mike backer, let the strong safety make the tackle. You're going to make your plays in space. In the passing game, you're going to make your plays on outside run plays. But it's a very disciplined position that goes unnoticed until something bad happens. And then it's, you know, like, hey, what happened on that play? Well, you know, the Leo backer lost contain or the Leo backer didn't reroute the slot receiver and it's a big game. So it's definitely a kind of a position that if you really, really know the ins and outs of football, you appreciate. But if you're just the casual fan, you would never know what's going on.
So what was it like? You kind of were growing up as a college player, as the program was growing around you. What do you remember from that time, just from you guys kind of getting sand kicked in your face to, you know, becoming successful?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know, the 99, 2000, 2001 seasons. It was tough because you saw a lot of great players around you and guys that are working really hard. But it's just, I think it's part of growing a program, you know. You know, you're going to go through some rough times. You're going to lose some games. But we all saw the work that was going on behind the scenes. You saw the coaches working hard, recruiting hard, you know, the players inside the locker room still believing, you know. A lot of guys were young, and it just happened, you know. It's the case of guys being consistent in what they do and believing in what they do. And, you know, you saw what happened 2001, you know, we win a bowl game. 2002, we win a Big Ten title. 2003, you know, we win a bowl game. 2004, Big Ten title. Just kind of that 2001 to, you know, 2004, 2005 era, just like, boom, the fruits of all that hard work for the coaches and players, you know, it happened, you know, so it was fun to be a part of that for sure. It was definitely fun to be a part of that. You learn a lot. You learn how hard it is to win and you learn how fun it is to win. And, just so many things that you go through in a hard time in 99, 2000 till boom, you win a Big Ten title in 2002. And it's like this big weight off your shoulder. Then the challenge, you know, is consistency after that to keep doing it without this, hey, we got to climb the mountain. We clumb the mountain. Now what do we do? So got to experience both sides of that. And it was an amazing time.
Do you still remember the name Gibran Hamden?
Oh yeah. Yeah. His, it's funny because I think his brother at one point in time was the offensive coordinator here at UW. And I was reading the news and I'm like, man, I think that's the same guy. And then I'm like, oh, it's his brother. So yeah, that game at Indiana was, It was a great game. It was not all earned on me. Like the guy threw me a couple of gifts, but it was fun. You know, it's always fun to have a game where you feel like you really made a big impact. And you know, it was a tough afternoon there at Indiana, and three red zone stops always helps the cause.
Yeah, for those listeners that don't remember, I believe you still have the record for 3 interceptions in a game. Do you share that with somebody?
Yeah, there's like 10, I think about 10 linebackers that have 3 picks in a game. And I actually coached a linebacker at USC, Cam Smith. He had 3 picks in a game. And I was telling him, like, hey, man, like, you just tied my record. And he's like, what are you talking about? So I had to kind of – I had to like show him, like we had to go in my office, you know, later that week and, you know, pull up the NCAA record book online and be like, hey, it's you, me, and about 15 other guys. So don't think it's that special. But yeah, I don't know if it's still in the Iowa record book. I feel like there's probably been a couple guys after me that have, you know, done it or tied it or done one more. But, you know, it was a cool experience.
And like you said, that game was a dogfight. It rained crazy the night before that. And I remember they put sand on the field and spray painted the sand at Memorial Stadium in Bloomington. It was not a good scene there. And it was just, then the next day was hot and humid. And it just, you guys were in a dogfight with that team.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at that season, which I'm sure you've had to, you know, you've looked at it a lot more than I have. Like we had a lot of dogfight games, you know, that game, the Purdue game, you know, it wasn't all just blowouts.
That game at Miami of Ohio was
I think that was like a 5-point game, you know, trying to get out of there, you know, was tough. So I'm sure I could argue with a lot of fans, but to me, that's the greatest Hawkeye team that Coach Ferentz has had. I'm sure every class that's had success, you know, we'll say that. I'm sure the 04 guys would say that. But and then the guys that have, you know, they went to the Big Ten title game, the Rose Bowl team, the 09 team. But I think if you just look man for man at that 02 team, you know, it was a pretty tough team to compete with in Hawkeye Legacy. And it was a great experience, you know, great experience.
I would agree. I covered the last 2 years of Coach Fry and then all of Coach Ferentz, and 2002 to me is still the standard, and I've debated that with people before, but I've covered them all, so I understand, and I'm with you. So that Indiana game, Grant, and then the next week you guys are in Ann Arbor, and
yeah,
it almost was like because you guys struggle with Indiana, you guys – I think outsiders were thinking, I don't know if they're going to be able to win in the Big House. Sure. But to me, that was the, this is something special moment.
I think we probably surprised ourselves at how just physically dominating that game really was. I mean, I'm trying to remember back if it was ever really close. You know, it seems like we just kind of snowballed them. You know, there was a muffed punt. There was big touchdowns. There was big sacks. You know, I just don't remember them really doing much. The only thing that from their end that I can really remember is I think the quarterback scrambled for about 40 yards on a broken play. You know, but it was a pretty good feeling. That was my only experience playing in Michigan. You know, just how the schedules line up and, you know, it was a great game to have if it was the only one that you were going to have in Michigan.
The 03 team, you guys just got destroyed down in the desert.
No, that was the year after me.
Was that 04?
All right, yep, that was 04.
You guys 03, you guys beat Arizona State, right? With the kid that came in was going to, with all the Heisman hype.
Yeah, so I think that was like a 21-2 game. Like, you know, they had like a punt that pinned us deep on the goal line and there was like a bobbled snap that, you know, I think Nate just took a safety so that it wasn't anything worse. But yeah, we played Arizona State at home in 03. Our losses in 03 were at Michigan State, which that's a tough place to play. I never won up there. We lost at Purdue. Never won there. I lost there in 01 and 03, and then we lost a close one at Ohio State.
That's right.
So those were our 3 losses in 03.
Yeah, Kirk still brings up that Michigan State game. He still kicks himself for kicking that away to Smoker and letting him get the ball first.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we might have let him out the gate, like first two drives of the game, they're up 14-0, and, you know, then we start to claw back. We did the same thing that same year to Michigan. I think we were down 14 or 17-0, and then, you know, we claw our way back, you know. Just sometimes that's how it goes, you know. You're playing defense, and they're coming out with maybe a new route combination or things like that that they know how to attack us. And it just happens like that. But, you know, Michigan State's a tough place to play, you know, for sure. You know, it ended up being a close game. I think it came down, like, to the last possession.
Yeah.
But, yeah, tough place to play up there.
But you did end the Iowa State streak that year. You guys went to Ames and had your way with the Cyclones. That must have been, for you as an in-state kid, that must have been one of the highlights of your career, I would imagine.
Yeah, I've said that before. It was, you know, we had our opportunities and to do it in the previous 2 years, and just, you know, they made that, you know, Seneca Wallace, that guy was unreal, making plays in 01 and 02 to help win those games. 01 obviously hurts for me a little bit more because I fumbled an interception that probably would have led to a score for us, but,
I'm glad you brought that up so I didn't have
No, I get ripped on it by everybody. I mean, Norm Parker, you know, for the next 2 years, every time we did like a turnover circuit, would make sure that he referenced that play. So it's fair game.
You were trying to make a play.
Yeah, I mean, not often do you get interceptions, and I guess my running back days from Emmitsburg didn't carry over because I'd been used to carrying the ball. But yeah, the 0-2 game again, like, we were up big, and I mean, that guy was special, you know. Yes. Like, he played up here for the Seahawks, and the staff around here talk about how special he was. So I mean, he was a great player. But yeah, to kind of end their little mini streak there in 0-3 at their place. Yeah, that was fun. It was fun, and we steamrolled them there. I mean, we had the game intact pretty much the whole game, but, you know, it was a fun game.
And then you end your Hawkeye career on a high note. Year before, you guys have a rough time of it in the Orange Bowl, but then go back to Florida in the Outback Bowl and play, you know, a Florida team that people expected to beat you guys, and you guys just kind of, that was one of those games where it just seemed like you guys were physically superior.
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be the stigma. It doesn't matter, you know, really what the Big Ten team versus an SEC team, like, there's just this stigma that, you know, the SEC teams are just that much better, or that much more athletic, whatever you want to call it, which, you know, I think it's been proven too many times now that that's not the reality. But the Florida game, you know, I had tweaked my ankle during the middle of the season and made a big play on a wide receiver screen, like a pretty big tackle. And the guy landed on my ankle and kind of broke up some scar tissue. So I missed a decent amount of the second half, which kind of stinks in your last game, but it was good to end on a really big play. And again, like, just to go out to finish your senior season with a win, I mean, that's how you want to do it. And, you know, all those guys playing in that game, a lot of seniors making a lot of big plays. It was just a cool experience. And to do it against a pretty big-time school in Florida, even though they were kind of rebuilding at that time, is special in itself. You know, the Hawkeyes have kind of made the Tampa their second home over the last, you know, X amount of years. And, you know, that was our first experience down there, and we had a blast, and to win the game is even that much better. So yeah, that was a great memory.
I had a feeling you guys were going to win once Ron Zook said Nate Kading was a heck of a running back.
Yeah. If Nate had to run the ball, we might've been in trouble, but thankfully,
he had the touchdown at Ohio State.
I mean, you couldn't sleep on Nate Kading. I think he won like 15 state titles in high school between soccer and basketball and football. So he's pretty sneaky, although I don't think we want to hand the ball off to him 25 times a game.
No. I think you guys were better off with Fred Russell carrying the pigskin.
Yeah, that was, you know, Dave Rye coached with Ron Zook up with the Packers, and he said they would talk about that game all the time. And I should have been like, well, why didn't he get to know the All-American kicker and not stir up the pot a little bit for us? But, you know, it was fun. It was a good time, good experience.
All right, so I did find this list of my five questions that I ask at the end of these things that are just kind of fun walk down memory lane from your time at Iowa. And the first question is, what was your favorite place, or where was your favorite place to hang out when you were here, non-restaurant or bar?
Ooh. In the early 2000s, pretty much every athlete lived out at Pheasant Ridge Apartments. You know, that's probably a rabbit hole we need to not go down.
Yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
But you know what? A lot of us hung out there. We had a good group of guys that liked to golf. So we spent a lot of time golfing, you know, never really at the same course. We just kind of bounced around different courses. Nate Kading worked at a course in high school, so we'd go up to North Liberty and golf a little bit there, hit balls out at the driving range. We spent a lot of time golfing when the weather was nice.
And now the second one, I will open this up to bar restaurants. What was your favorite place to eat when you were a student at Iowa?
Because we lived out there on the west side, we ate down at the Wing and Pen quite a bit. So that's kind of an iconic Iowa City spot to go to if you're in town.
What was your meal of choice? Did you just go pizza, or did you go Wigatoni, or what?
Yeah, I was more of a Wigatoni guy. Wigatoni brings back a lot of good memories there.
Grant, what was your favorite course of study or professor while you were at Iowa?
Man, this guy would kill me if I didn't say his name. So Randy Hirokawa was the dean of the communications school, and I took a couple classes with him throughout that department. And he's actually now the president or the dean at University of Hawaii Hilo. And Randy was my advisor in college. And so I had changed my major into communications, and I'm taking a class, and you know, typical first day, you're introducing yourself, and he says my name, and he goes, "Sit down, I know who you are, and stop fumbling the ball when you intercept it." And I'm like, hey, thanks for putting me out there like that, Randy. Like, come on, man. But we've remained in touch over the years, especially when I moved to Hawaii. But Randy Hirokawa was a great professor. He was a big supporter of the program. Like, that guy would do every single recruiting visit, to meet with parents, just a guy that was really all in with Coach Ferentz and helping the program, doing a lot of things like that. So you got a lot of professors like that at the school, and you know, it's always good to have one of those guys that you know personally.
Yes, and I will agree with you on that. I know Randy, and when I was at the Press Citizen back in the day, and his daughter played at City High, was an athlete, and I covered her, and I got to know Randy. I'm still friends with Randy on Facebook, and he's a good guy, and he looks like he's living the good life down there in Hawaii.
Yep, he's back at home, and you know, he's loving it. The Big Island's a great place to be. You know, there's a lot of things to do there. You can get your retirement years in well out there.
I think you mentioned Robert Gallery as your roommate at Iowa. Who else did you room with at Iowa?
So my in the dorms, my first roommate was Andy Borchers. Corey Borchers.
Corey, yeah.
Yep, from Lamar's. We played football and basketball against each other in high school. And then when we moved out of the dorms, Jared Kloss, D. Lyman from West Des Moines, yep. And then Robert and I, we're all roommates. And then right across the street, you had Chad Greenway. You had Eric Jensen across the road. You had Colin Cole, Fred Barr, right across the road, Ramon Ochoa. We all kind of lived in the same little spot. And then there was a couple of the Mike Dolezal, Fred, some of those guys were right across the road. So, yeah, my roommates were Robert and Jared, and you know, they were in my wedding. Dave Rye was in my wedding. You know, a lot of the guys from my era, you know, we do a pretty good job of staying close. You know, it's tough when you're coaching to get back to games. You know, they always want to get a reunion together, and I've had to miss every single, you know, reunion or things like that because I'm coaching. But they keep me up to speed on all the, you know, the alumni stuff.
Do you watch the games, Grant? Do you try to get a chance to watch?
Yeah. I mean, when I was living in Hawaii, I was up at 6 a.m. to watch the games. If we're, you know, on the road or in a meeting, I'm listening to Dolph on the radio. You know, I've tried to call in several times, Dolph, to get on the post-game show, and you never take my call. So, you know.
I'll let him know.
But, yeah, I know what's going on in the program. I might not know all the details like a diehard fan, but I try to watch or listen to every single game.
Cool, cool. And then our last question here of our five is your favorite Kirkism. Could be a story, could be something that you remember him saying a lot that stuck with you. Something in that regard.
Not so much a saying. It's coach has a great way of talking with his hands. You know, as someone in the media, you've seen him, you know, at the podium all the time, but he would always do this one thing in the team meeting room. You know, he would like be talking with his hands and thinking, and like his index finger, he would pull down on his bottom eyelid, you know, every so often. And I don't know if he knows he did it, but I think during one of the rookie shows, Brian Ferentz, you know, he got up there to impersonate his dad because he's the only one that could do it, but he had it down perfect. And like, he finished it off, if I remember right, by like pulling down on his eyelid and then like grabbing the gum out of his mouth and throwing it. So, yeah, coach does a great job of being animated with his hands when he's in front of a group of people talking.
I've seen that eyelid move before.
Yep.
Many times through the years. All right, Grant. Well, again, I really appreciate you doing this. I kept you probably longer than I wanted to or you wanted to, but it was great, great stuff to go over and some great stories, and I appreciate you joining us.
Oh, no, I appreciate it, too. It you know, it makes you feel appreciated, you know, not only myself, but I'm probably speaking for a lot of the former athletes at Iowa that, you know, there's guys like you doing stuff like this, you know, to – you know, just to keep the connection with the fans and the players around. So I had a blast, and just looking forward to the Hawkeyes having a great season this year.